All right. So welcome to an awesome interview that we have lined up today. And I am so excited to be bringing on Kelly Hager. And Kelly is coming on today all the way from the U.S. And she's coming from St. Louis, Missouri. And we are so excited to have her. She has such a powerful story. And Kelly, without further ado, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have such a good story. So I am so excited to share your story with our viewers and have them meet you and hear about how you recovered. So, Kelly, the big thing that I've heard about you, and we haven't gone that deep in this, and I'm so excited to hear more about it, is about how you actually had a coma, didn't you?
Yeah, so we definitely, I was working incredibly hard. I had family, a little boy, as well as a husband, and was running a real estate firm at the time. And I came home one night and wasn't really feeling so great. By the end of that evening, I said to my husband, I really feel terrible. And he said, well, why don't you take some Advil, go to sleep, and when you wake up in the morning, if you still feel badly, then we'll go to the doctor. Well, the next morning, I woke up, and I was in terrible pain, and my head was kind of swooshing around. And so I said to him, it was like 5 a.m., and I said to him, I said, you need to take me to the hospital. And I had never been to the hospital before, so I didn't even really know what to expect. So we got there, and, you know, things kind of went from bad to worse. At that point, they couldn't figure out what was wrong, and so they pretty much treated the symptoms, and they sent me home for a couple of days, and I was getting worse and worse at home, so they brought me back to the hospital, and, you know, now they've brought infectious disease in, they've brought in every doctor they can possibly get their hands on. Still no good results. They were just really treating the symptoms. So I went back, I went to a hospital that was more of an educational type of a hospital, and I went there, and pretty much within a couple of days, my organs were shutting down. I was put in a medically induced coma and put on life support, and, you know, that's really, unfortunately, when the journey really started. And, you know, so when you're in a coma, and I don't know if any of your viewers have been in a coma, at least my experience was you don't hear anything, you don't really see anything, you have crazy dreams. I knew I was on a ventilator, but I couldn't really decipher what I was doing. It was just kind of a bad dream all the way through. So then I woke up about several weeks later, and about 90 days had passed total, and I was in really bad shape. So yeah, that's kind of how it all started.
Wow. And what was actually wrong? And were like,
they never could figure it out.
Really?
They never could figure it out. So I woke up from being in a coma, and I couldn't really see. I couldn't walk. I had lost pretty much all functionality. My memory was really bad. I could speak, but only a couple of words at a time. It was really just a shell at that point. And, you know, so I was in intensive care still for quite a bit, and then I finally got out of intensive care. I was strong enough to get out of the ICU, which was a big blessing, and we were all really relieved, including myself. But when you wake up from a coma, you're so relieved to see people. I kept saying to my family, I love you, I love you, I love you. And finally my dad was like, okay, it's getting weird. Can you stop saying that? Like, you're saying it constantly. So I was like, okay, sorry. You just don't even know. And, you know, the doctors would say things to me like, what year is it? I had no idea. And my mom finally said to me, you know, it's 2010. And then I could remember that, oh, it's 2010. So when the doctors would come in and ask that sporadically, I'd be like, it's 2010. I was so proud of myself that I had remembered that. But then I got out of the intensive care unit, and my mom ran up to Chicago to see my sister, who was 8.5 months pregnant. And since they didn't know what I had, they would not let her come down. And my dad ran off to Los Angeles because that's where my parents live, and just check on the house and the dogs and all of that. So they were just gone for a night, and that was the night that my husband then came in and told me that he wanted a divorce. So
Whoa.
it was a really tough time, but quite honestly, I was so glad to be alive that I know that sounds a little fruit, but I was so glad to be alive that it didn't even really, quite honestly, sink in. So, you know, then it was really just understanding, okay, I've got to learn how to walk. I have a 3-year-old at home that is very good at walking, running, et cetera, and I can't even walk yet. So definitely had to work on that. That was my first big goal, was to learn how to take steps and all of that again. And then the recovery began. So had to learn how to walk, had to learn how to, they gave me prism glasses to make sure that my eyes kind of came back to the same line, because I had terrible double vision. And that, I guess, happens sometimes when you're in a coma. And then it was really a lot of occupational therapy and physical therapy and, you know, really starting to just kind of get my wits about me again. And that's really what happened. That's how everything started.
Wow. And then, you know, one thing I think people don't actually mention a lot, I had a very dear friend die, and I was very close to her family, and, you know, I'll never forget it, because, you know, it was devastating for mm-hmm. family and friends and everybody. And fortunately, it's great you didn't die, because you're very, 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 you're doing amazing things now. But, you know, one thing I think people don't actually talk about whenever these kinds of things happen is, you know, adapting back into the world, because the world doesn't stop. Mm-hmm. So for you, what was, you know, like, you had a, you know, you were doing real estate, you had things going on before it even happened. So, you know, what was that like? You know, how did you come back to work? You know, how did you readjust? You know, how did you deal with, I mean, obviously, was it stressful? What was that like for you?
So what I would tell you, and it's interesting that you bring up family and all the people that surround you, it was much harder on the people that were around me than it was for me, because I was pretty much out, where, you know, my poor family who was there literally every day. My parents moved back from Los Angeles while I was sick, and, you know, they were there every day. And so just having that stress, and, you know, they thought I wasn't going to make it. And if I did make it, I was going to be a vegetable. So that constant stress of the family life around you is just, was, like I said, it was much harder for them and the people that I worked with. So at that time, my business team was we were 5 people. And the girls that worked for me at the time literally took over the business while I was gone. So wow. Not only did I have my own real estate team, which they were amazing, I also was part owner of the real estate firm that I was sitting in. So there were 2 different groups there, and I cannot even tell you the generosity and the loyalty and the, you know, we had to keep it as quiet as they possibly could, because, you know, we had a lot of clients, and there was a lot of business that still had to go on whether I was there or I wasn't there. And when you're an organization of 5, if you're the main salesperson and you're not there, that, you know, certainly could have spun out of control. But the people that I have that surrounded me, and all of those guys now are leaders on my team, but my team at that time, they just did an unbelievable job. The first day I came back, I literally I was on a walker at that point, so I was out of a wheelchair, which was great. But it took me longer to get in the building than I finally got to my desk. I looked at the computer, and I couldn't read. So I
wow.
knew, like, oh, none of this is sinking in. And so I was there for about 15 minutes, and I called my mom, and I said, can you come back, and can you pick me up? And she was like, we just sat down to lunch. And I was like, you're just going to have to hold on a minute. I was like, no, you have to come, because I was starting to panic, because I thought, oh, my gosh, people are seeing me. I had an eye patch on. My hair had fallen out. So I not only did I look terrible, I couldn't read, and I really couldn't function in that environment. And so then it was really just understanding that I was going to have to go slower than what I had ever done before. And I had no concept of time, and I had no understanding of truly what was going on and what wasn't. And one of my business partners that was not part of my real estate team but part of the whole franchise, he said to me, he said, you don't need to take anything back. What you need to do is you need to just start having business conversations. And that advice was the best advice that I ever took. So I've never sold a home since then. I've hired other people. I've hired other agents on the team. And that's how we really started to build the team, was because I couldn't walk. I couldn't go up and down steps. So it was really a challenge that we had to work through. And it was just the people that surrounded me. I could not be in the position that I'm in today without them. So family, my business friends, my coworkers, my on both sides, they were miraculous while I was so challenged.
Wow. So it really sounds like because of your, you had built a team that really looked after you before anything ever happened. How did you do that? I mean, it's hard, like I know one of the biggest things that we suffer from in Australia is, as a business owner and many business owners is, how do you build a successful team that supports you, and how do you get people that committed that, you can know that you can walk away?
Yeah. People ask me that all the time, and it's a really good question because it's really hard to do if you don't have a process in place. And what I tell you is my first great hire, who's now the vice president of my company, was dumb luck, and that was just lucky, lucky, lucky. After that, though, we really put in processes. So you've got to kind of hire your opposites in a lot of cases. So I'm a big thinker. I like looking at the 10,000-mile view, and then I can get into the bite-sized pieces, but I needed somebody that could really shore up all of the details. Because in real estate, just as with many other businesses, there's thousands and thousands of details and so many moving parts. So you really have to hire your opposite. That's the first hire in the system. And then after that, you really have to systematically look at what are your job descriptions and what choices do you need to make in order to not only have the revenue that can back up the additional team members, but also the right job description and the right person. And here's the other piece that I'm really sincere about and I'm really genuine about that a lot of people that are in my position really struggle with. I really understand I'm one member of a team. I definitely did not understand that, though, before I went into coma. But I really understand that I'm only one member of the team. And because I'm only one member of the team, I rely on all those other spokes on the wheel just as much as I rely on myself. And if you can delegate like that and really, you set out your goals, you set out your priorities, and then the strategies that go to each priority, you really have to have the right person in that role. And I know that I'm not good at the detail-oriented stuff. I know I'm really great at ideas, at collaboration, at innovation, and then I have other people that really execute my vision. So it's really a matter of looking at what you are trying to do and how are you going to get there and how are you really going to get from, A to B and B to C and C to D. I think so many people that are visionaries just go from A to D, and where they fail is they haven't really measured out in B and C and really executed those levels extremely, extremely well.
Yeah, and building a team is really hard when you're a visionary. I mean, it's really challenging. So, how do you if you're in the space where, wages are high here. So, if you're in the space where you're in a, country where you do have high wages and things are, especially for us in Australia, how do you make sure you're bringing on the right people? Can you just share with us? Because I think what I'm hearing is a lot about how you could actually, have something this tragic happen to you and still have your business run and have a team do it.
You bet.
That's us, that's what everybody wants. So, can you just share a little bit about,
Sure.
what maybe your high, what are some good tips for how do you find those kinds of people that'll be that committed to you?
You bet. So there's a couple of ways. The first piece is if you're going to make your first true hire and you're worried about the financial impact to yourself of if they don't work out, you spent all this time training them and then they decide to leave you for one reason or another. Here's what I'd tell you. Why don't you take a 3-month window and say, this is going to be a temporary job that could potentially be a full-time job. And what I mean by that is, like let's look at the next 90 days. So although wages are really high, and let's say someone's average wage is $50,000 or $60,000 a year there, if you're looking at it on a monthly basis, then over a 3-month period on a $60,000 wage, you're only looking at $15,000. Sometimes it's easier for people to stomach, like, okay, I can make a $15,000 investment and let's see how this goes. Because what somebody who comes on, they should stabilize the organization and then they should be a part of the growth. So then, if you're looking at specific ways to get it, we do that several different ways. The best way, the absolute best way, is go to kind of your personal board of directors, your people that surround you, and say, who do you know? Not do you know somebody, but who do you know that need that could help me fulfill this position? I cannot tell you how many people that I got that way by just really understanding who do my people all know and who do I need to know that they know that are exceptional. So that's the first place to start. Let's say you don't have a good personal board of directors. Go to the next piece. Go out and do pay-per-click advertising. Make sure you've got a great job description. And in the States, we have Monster.com, we have Indeed.com. I'm not sure if those
Yeah,
translate
we
there,
have
but I know you
Seek,
guys.
and yeah, we have Seek, and we do have
Okay.
we do have different job, but Seek is a main one out here.
Yes. So what I tell you is if you get very specific in that job, in that detail of that role, then you're going to get a very specific candidate. Do you guys have Craigslist there?
We do, but
Or no?
it's not used like it is in America.
Okay. Okay, gotcha. Because a lot of times Craigslist, because A, it's not expensive. I think it's $25, where some of the other ones are a little bit more expensive, but that might be a spot that you could go and look. So that's another avenue. The other space that you can hire other people from is job fairs. Do you guys do job fairs there?
Yeah, they do. They do. We do job
Okay,
fairs.
so job fairs are great. The other place that is really big in the US is LinkedIn. So, and
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure is it big there?
Yes.
Okay, so there's a premier account that you can get on LinkedIn, and it costs $100 a month. That's another great space that you can go and you can really investigate people, and you can look at also who on out of your friends list or people that you work with, who they're connected to. And it's just a lot of time and networking, but there is nothing more important than hiring the right team. The other thing that we do that I have found really beneficial is we do personality tests. So you know what kind of a personality you need for a sales position. You know what you need for an accounting position or an operations position. So it's really great to then take those personality tests, and although they don't mean everything, they definitely can lead you in the right direction to see if somebody's even on the same realm of what you really need to execute. So we like to use the DISC test. It's DISC, and that has been very helpful for us. Do you guys ever use that there?
Yes, it is. It's pretty big out here as well. Yeah.
Okay. So if you take, the best place to go is to your personal board of directors and asking those people, who do you know? That's the first piece. Pay-per-click is one. Craigslist is one. Job fairs is a place. And then it's just then taking all of those different resources and then drilling those people down. How's your unemployment rate there?
It's going up. Actually, our unemployment
Okay.
rate is going up. It's getting higher. They say it's pretty high, but when you actually go to hire, I don't know that I for me personally, maybe this is my own experience, but I wouldn't believe unemployment is high. But it is, when higher than it's been in a very long time.
Okay. So if that continues to rise, your candidate pool is going to get greater and greater. So it's really just creating that opportunity. So what I always like to do is I always like to get at least 100 to 200 resumes that I can scan through, because here's the wonderful piece of that. You can knock out probably half of them because their grammar's incorrect, their resumes aren't at the level that you're looking for those specific roles. So that knocks out, let's just say if you've got 200, that knocks out 100. Then you really get into the specifics of what you're looking for. That's going to knock out another 50 to 75. Then you're really down to your top 25 to 50 candidates. And then it's somebody screening them on whether it's you or it's, you know, somebody that you've hired to screen them and ask them specific behavioral-based questions, and we've got those questions that that we can share with the people that you know that we work with, and it's really wonderful to be able to say, okay, I feel 100% with this candidate because they've done a great job with the behavioral questions, they've done a great job based on this role with the DISC, they've interviewed very well, their resume looks terrific. So, you know, you're starting to add up all the criteria that really helps you get to that loyal, you know, very collaborative mindset that can get you to the next level. The other piece that I've really found to be very interesting is before I got sick, I didn't delegate, I didn't really prioritize the way I do today, I didn't time block. So managing my time is probably the hardest thing I do every day. But it's a matter of really getting the right team in place around you that can really work through all of the details that you really that aren't your strength, where they are, you know, somebody who's very detailed, they're their strength. So I would say it's just a matter of staying incredibly focused on the outcome. And then you've got to train these people. So you've got to make sure that you're spending time with them daily, weekly, monthly, and you might be looking at on a daily basis. We have morning huddles, so where everybody's kind of up to date on what everybody else is doing and who needs help and who doesn't, who's got a little bit of extra time. That morning huddle gets everybody engaged and gets the buy-in and the loyalty that everybody's truly working together. I'll tell you, that's been one of the best things that we've ever implemented.
That's awesome. And now, because, you know, I think what's really cool is, you know, today you get to do a whole lot of fun things. So, you
You
know,
bet.
you know, you kind of have this, you've got this really cool life happening. So, you know, share with us at now, how much time do you actually spend in your real estate business now?
Sure. So I spend about 10 hours a week on the real estate side. What I spend the majority of my time on is going out and doing large speaking engagements. So, and a little bit of consulting as well. So I'll go out, I'll go for a day to a different part of the country or a different part of the world. I'll give a big speaking engagement, anywhere from, you know, 500 people to 10,000 people. And then we get to then have meetings with their CEOs and their leadership teams and sometimes their sales divisions, depending on which piece of the consulting side that they utilize with me. And it's so much fun because I'll tell you what it does. It helps people get from where they are currently to the next level of what they're looking to achieve. And it's so rewarding. So I love going out, sharing my story, as well as being able to turn that for people and help them build business where they might not have believed or had the hope that they could achieve that, being able to be that light and that beacon for many people all over the world has been unbelievably satisfying. So that's a big chunk of my time at the moment. And then I actually manage an Australian rock band. I manage their US operations. I've been to Australia. I lived there when I was in my 20s, and I worked with this band. And then I came back to the U.S., you know, got into my corporate life and all of that, and reconnected with these guys about 18 months ago. And it's just really fun to see. They're just getting signed in Australia and about to do massive amounts of touring in the U.S. as well with new albums and a documentary and all kinds of fun stuff coming. So actually, my Australian friend was just here for about a week, and you know, it's taken me a couple of days to recover, to be honest. Thank God we had a holiday weekend.
Oh, they're fun.
Very, very, very fun. So I'm living a life that I just could not be more excited about. Now my son is 8 years old, and you know, lucky for him, he gets to travel with me quite a bit. I always say to him, hey, pick a city that you want to go to, you know, over the next couple of months, and you know, we'll go to a different city every month. And so I'll do a speaking engagement there, and he'll come along for the ride, and we'll go do some fun activities with me. So it's just a matter of building a life that you really want to have, and you can have anything. You really can have anything. And so that's kind of what I do today. So I'm up at the crack of dawn, and I don't go to bed until really late because is U.S. time is starting to go down. Australia time, you know, you guys are just waking up. So so then the second part of my life starts. And it's just great fun. And it's unbelievably rewarding.
It sounds like a whole lot of fun. It sounds like every day is a lot of fun. So
you bet.
Are you coming? Are you going to be? Now we're having this conversation. So I do know that you're actually going to be you're going to be coming to Australia soon, and you're actually going on tour.
Wait.
You're coming on tour,
yes,
here, which is really exciting. So tell us a little bit about what your plans are while you're out here. I know several of the people that are going to be connecting on this interview and hearing about it. They may be interested in catching up with you or learning more about you. So tell us a little bit about when you're coming and what your plans are, and how to best contact you.
Absolutely. So I should land August 20th in the morning, and I'm there through the 31st. And I've got a couple of speaking engagements already booked, as well as working with my Australian bands there. But I do have some free time August 24th, 25th, 26th, and 27th. I've got about 5 appointments left. And what I'd love to offer is just about an hour of free time across five different companies while I'm there, that hopefully I can make an impact in your business. So if you would want to do something like that, if you'd want to be considered for something like that, when I've done this before in other cities, I literally get 100 people. So I can really only pick 5, but if you want your business to be considered for this 1-hour strategic planning session with me, just if you can send me a high-level overview of your business, just a few paragraphs, and most importantly, your top 3 challenges that keep you up at night, and why you should be selected as one of the businesses. And you can send that to, and it would be confidential, to kelly@kellyhager.com, and it's kelly@kellyhager.com.
Awesome. And Kelly, we're really, really, it's amazing to have you because you've got such a great story. Such a great story.
Thank you. And
I don't know many people who can build a team like what you're doing. You know, a lot of people dream about, you know, having a business or having a team that can operate without them. But when we actually get into it, you know, we get stuck in the day-to-day grind and we can't delegate. And I think, you know, you've got a great, you know, your story and how it actually ended up happening is pretty amazing. It's unfortunate that you went through a coma, but, you know, what you've come out with the end, you're really impacting people. So in just how many businesses, just out of curiosity, I mean, how many people have you been able to support in doing this work now having a team that can support you? How many businesses have you been able to touch and change? And what are some of the results?
With?
Yeah, like, so what are some of their results? I can imagine it's pretty awesome.
You know, it's really fun. So I've gotten to work with some really large corporations as well as very small ones. And the large corporations, what we've really been able to achieve is performance-based and efficiency-based. So if you look at efficiency and you look at time management and delegation and priorities, we've had great success in increasing efficiency, sometimes as much as 13 to 14% That's a lot of time. And what I tell everybody is if we can get you back an hour every day from each employee, what will that do for your business? What things could change if you have, let's just say, 100,000 people working for you? If you were able to get an hour back from every one of those employees, what does that look like? What could you do if you had that time? So then it's about efficiency. So that's been great. Also, if you have a small corporation and efficiency is just as important there. Let's say you have 10 people that work for you or 20 people that work for you. Even getting back those hours, in addition to potentially changing the way your mind works and your mindset, by opening that up a little bit, you cannot imagine the impact that it can make. And then in also additional streams of revenue of how are you going to generate more revenue so you can be a sustainable corporation and really grow to the level that you want to grow to. I love working with entrepreneurs and I love working with large corporations, and we've made a very large impact. I have some great testimonials from corporations like Bank of America and Express Scripts and very top 20, Fortune top 20 in the US, as well as some smaller corporations that we've really been able to make an impact by generating more sales and getting their salespeople to do more. So they don't necessarily have to hire more people, but that their people are more productive. So it's been very rewarding.
Absolutely, absolutely. I can imagine. I mean, it's awesome. It's awesome, and you're so inspiring. It's so inspiring. So many people go to hospital and have tragic things happen, and then, they just give up. They give up, or they, decide to go on a, they might go for a big long holiday across the world and then just come back and just play the rest of their life. So that's awesome. Well, Kelly, it's been awesome having you. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. You're such an inspiration.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to coming there. So if anybody is interested, we'd love to get together with you.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks so much, Kelly.
Thank you.